Are you looking for ways to attract and retain private pay clients? Thrizer is a payment platform for therapists built to help clients automatically tap into their out-of-network benefits and save on therapy up front. Check out our special link, join.thrizer.com/modern therapist, and use the code modernTherapists to activate $2,500 in free payments with Thrizer.
Simplified SEO Consulting has DIY done with you training and done for you SEO options. So there is truly something to fit every practice owner's SEO needs. Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern therapist and use the code modern therapist for a DIY course or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your consult for special offers.
You're listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide, where therapists live, breathe, and practice as human beings. To support you as a whole person and a therapist, here are your hosts, Kurt Widhelm and Katie Vernoy.
Welcome back, Modern Therapists. This is the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. I'm Kurt Widhelm with Katie Vernoy, and this is the podcast about all things therapists, the things that we like to do, the things that we don't like to do. And Katie and I spend some time in some of the various therapist Facebook groups, online groups, and stuff. And we were inspired by a post that was put somewhat recently about what we're just going to classify as icky terminations.
Yes. And
long time ago, we had done a podcast episode that, at least off the top of our minds, is about positive terminations and the termination process. And Katie and I have been talking about the roles of when can we terminate with clients? Why can we do it? Why can we not do it? What our responsibilities are in these situations. And especially in some of the discussions that we see in some of these groups that really throw out a lot of, hey, that's unethical sort of things. We have a whole episode on that's unethical, but I don't actually see a lot of engagement in an ethical decision-making process in these statements. And so therefore, that's unethical just kind of stands in for, I don't like that.
Yeah.
So a lot of the questions that we're trying to address in this episode is, when can our feelings kind of lead to us prematurely ending services, and what are our responsibilities in doing so?
The question around quote-unquote premature termination, as far as a treatment standard, the client has not completed treatment or finished services with you, they don't want to finish with you. I think that's always challenging because there's a lot of different reasons in my past that I've had to have these premature terminations. There have been shifting programs. I moved from one program to a next, and I had to terminate and transfer a client to a different therapist. I left an agency. I went off an insurance panel. I felt like I was not an effective therapist for someone. And I think most of the time with these quote unquote icky terminations, I was feeling kind of situated in a place of discomfort, but not, I never felt threatened. I never felt like it was something that was too hard for me to navigate. But it was something where I had to make sure that I was considering the client, trying to process the termination with them, link them appropriately, and then move on. It's uncomfortable. Oftentimes clients are upset. They may feel betrayed or abandoned. But I think the true thing when we get to ethics is about whether, in fact, we actually are abandoning them or doing what we need to do in order to get them situated with their next treatment situation.
And so a lot of these questions are going to come up around things like violence, either directed towards the therapist, situations where the therapist feels threatened, whether it's a direct threat, whether it's kind of more just kind of coarse language that isn't necessarily directed at the therapist. We see this in racist comments made by clients, homophobic clients against therapists who may come from those communities themselves. And the insight that I can really offer on this is having sat through ethics committee meetings as a ethics committee member, is it helps to know how ethics committees think of these things. For full transparency purposes, I'm talking about my role in this, not speaking on behalf of the Camp Ethics Committee on which I sit. But what I can talk about is the process of how we would look at these things. And ethics committees look at ethics complaints. So asking first and foremost in these situations is this ethical for me to do, might not be the right question to start with. The right question to start with is, how would I ethically do this? And this goes back to that ethical decision-making process that I mentioned at the top of the show. And ethical decision-making process is, look at your ethics codes and see which ethics apply to the particular situation that you're in, because that's what the ethics committees are going to do. When it comes to things like termination, we're going to look at things like, is this an abandonment situation? Is this a situation where the therapist took reasonable steps in order to help the client secure other services? Is this something where it's the therapist just making their own personal values something that is bigger than the therapeutic process that has already been agreed to? And how did they go about instituting the actions that they decided from there? So when we see questions, or when I see questions in some of these groups about, is this ethical for me to do? My first response is really, how are you applying your relevant ethics code to the particular situation that you're asking about? Because that's ultimately how an ethics committee is going to evaluate this.
So if we're looking at someone choosing to terminate a client because they feel threatened by the client. So let's just go there, whether it's a physical threat, a verbal threat. I've had colleagues who were stalked. I mean, there's a lot of different ways where there's been actual physical violence, threats of violence, and just kind of threats of identity. So let's be very broad, because I think that that's helpful. What are the things that we actually have to look at? Because I hear kind of abandonment and maybe continuity of care. But what is my responsibility as someone who is feeling threatened in that situation? Like, what do I actually have to do when I'm in a place of feeling threatened?
The shortest and most distinct answer I can give you is terminate appropriately.
Okay.
Now, this is where your reasons for feeling the way that you do might necessitate a number of different actions here, but I'm going to point to an article from Richard Leslie over at CPH Insurance on their Avoiding Liability blog. The original part of this that I'm citing right now comes from a 2005 article from him that was updated a couple of times after that. But what Richard points out is, if the termination process is not properly carried out, the attempt to end a professional relationship with a client can constitute or be argued as an abandonment of that client. And this could lead to lawsuits, complaints to your licensing boards, complaints to ethics committees. And while patients generally have a right to terminate at any time, therapists do not. Now, that's not saying you never have these options. What it's saying is that you as a professional are held to a higher standard through this process. So in situations like what you're describing, is that, yeah, if a client brings a gun to session and is pointing it at you and making threats, save your life. Like, you know, in those moments, like, do what is necessary and given and document the hell out of that in case you are being investigated.
Sure.
But
sure.
That is providing the appropriate kind of thought for the ethics committee or the disciplinary boards to be able to look at, okay, these are the circumstances that make sense. Now, outside of those incredibly rare situations that, like that, where it's probably just more uncomfortable sorts of things of saying mean things about you or the communities that you're from, even if they are to a level that is seen and agreed upon by many people as a very heightened and emotionally driven and triggering sort of rhetoric, we're not talking about the same level of action here. And this is where our professionality is what separates us from those non-professionals, is that we are expected to engage in a thoughtful process of what we do that is best for the client regarding these situations. Thrizer is a payment platform designed for out-of-network therapy. As a therapist, you would use Thrizer to charge clients for sessions and collect your full rate upfront. From the client's perspective, Thrizer links to their health plan, so insurance claims are automatically submitted for them upon every charge. From there, Thrizer manages the claims end-to-end so that your clients don't have to worry about manually submitting super bills or getting on calls with insurance. The best part? Thrizer allows clients to only pay their co-insurance portion for sessions, while Thrizer covers the rest of your fee and waits for reimbursement on their behalf.
They also offer you an instant benefits calculator for free, allowing you to provide upfront transparency to prospective clients on their out-of-network coverage. Therapists only pay a standard 3% credit card processing fee per session with no additional fees. Visit join.thrizer.com/modern therapist to get started and use our promo code Modern Therapists to receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions. The caution I am feeling in the what you're talking about is that there is a very different perception of what's happened from someone who sits in privilege versus someone who sits in a number of different marginalized identities. I think there's also a lot of squishiness on what is truly threatening. I've had clients stand over me and say mean things. As a reasonably large woman, I don't necessarily feel completely physically overwhelmed by that, but I also know as a woman, I'm oftentimes feeling more physically threatened than a man might feel in that same situation. And so who determines what is truly a risk or truly dangerous? Because there's so much that could be threatening or dangerous that trying to document it appropriately or trying to explain why the hair on the back of my neck is up because I'm feeling very threatened. To me, it seems like as a clinician, am I able to make that assessment or am I going to be held to some standard of someone who doesn't feel threatened by somebody saying something to me?
Well, taking this from the individual and out to the profession is what would a reasonable therapist do in the same situation? Now, if there's questions of safety involved, most reasonable therapists are going to look at that in a way of, yeah, this is a client who's showing that they are not able to be physically safe in this kind of a work environment. That leads to the appropriate termination process. Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily have to keep seeing the client, and I don't necessarily have to fully justify 27 times over that I'm feeling threatened. If someone in a similarly situated in the world to me as a therapist would have a similar response, would determine that this client was not appropriate to continue in treatment, I can terminate the client. I cannot abandon them.
Correct.
And so you keep saying appropriately terminate, and that feels like it could be 3 referrals and off you go, or it could be a full processing of the termination. Neither of those extremes feel appropriate when I'm feeling threatened because one feels like abandonment, one feels like self-abandonment, that I'm sacrificing myself and holding myself to a standard of having this conversation with the client that I feel threatened by. So what do I actually have to do to appropriately terminate someone who I feel threatened by, who I do not want to see again?
You need to do what's best for the client. And given the particulars of the situation that you're in, is going to dictate what those actions are. Now, when we have generally high-functioning clients who are moving to another jurisdiction, or if we're kind of leaving a practice and retiring, moving on someplace else, and this is a client who may or may not want to start services with somebody else, an appropriate sort of action with them is, hey, here's 3 referrals in case you're interested. I think that these people kind of work like me. You might respond well to them. That's an appropriate thing in that situation. And at the basis of your question is looking for a universal answer to a very nuanced set of different sets of clients. And as far as the topic of this episode goes, is might not be appropriate enough here, in that for whatever reason, a client like this may be in such a heightened state that just providing them with three names might not be enough for them to actually get the services that they need. And this is where it is important for you as a therapist in these situations to document your reasoning for taking the actions that you have, because that is going to give whatever investigatory committee the insight into the thought process that you're going through. If a client saying a bunch of racist or sexist or homophobic stuff to a person representing one of those communities, yeah, I validate any therapist's feelings in that situation of, hey, this is really uncomfortable for me. I don't think that I can benefit this client. I've expressed my views of this is how it affects people from this community. Client escalated their rhetoric after I shared how my personal values might be affecting our process going forward. And I determined that I cannot serve this client because they're not going to respond to the types of interventions that I'm providing as a representative of that community. Therefore, I explained that to them and I gave them three names of people that they might respond to. That's an appropriate termination.
Okay. What if I decide after I get done with a session, I can't see this client again. I can't talk to this client again. Maybe I was in fight or flight in the session, feeling overwhelmed, feeling threatened. How do I do an appropriate termination in that way? Because sending an email with three names doesn't feel like it's enough.
Nor would I have that conversation with them through an email. Now,
okay.
Appropriate termination. This is easy to imagine in an agency type setting.
Sure.
Now, if there's an extremely triggering client to you as a therapist in an agency, appropriate termination doesn't necessarily have to come from you as an individual. That in an agency, it's very easy to imagine somebody else from the agency being an agent on your behalf who takes care of these very same steps for you. You know, I'll be your coworker here and go to this particular client who's a client of the agency and say, hey, Katie's no longer able to do services with you based on what she's provided about this situation. She feels that it's in your best benefit to reach out to one of these three following therapists, or based on kind of a treatment team sort of decision, you're going to either be reassigned to this therapist or you're going to, that is a warm process that is handed off. Where I think a lot of people have difficulties in imagining this is when you're a solo practitioner and you don't necessarily have somebody else to rely on in this way. But appropriate terminations can still involve having somebody act as an agent on your behalf, preferably a trusted licensed colleague who's working with you, somebody that you would have covering your practice on vacation, that there are standards within our profession that do allow for other people to act on our behalf in certain situations. Having somebody do this, if it is not in the benefit of the client for you to do this, or if it's not something that you're able to professionally fulfill your role in that way, an appropriate termination is having somebody act on your behalf in this way, doing basically these same kind of steps for you.
So as you're talking about it, it makes sense, because I did that a lot as a supervisor, manager, director in an agency, as I had to have those conversations. I reassigned cases. I did all those things. So that totally makes sense. And trying to translate it to private practice and having an agent, someone that might cover your practice when you're on vacation, what are the confidentiality issues here? Because I think here's someone that's out of nowhere, their therapist saying, I can't work with you anymore. Someone they don't know comes and says, hey, Katie can't work with you anymore. I'm here to help you find a new therapist. I mean, how do you not get in trouble both for abandonment and breaking confidentiality? Like, how do you actually do this?
In your best case and future forward thinking for yourself, you would probably want to add something to your informed consent about situations in which you're incapacitated or otherwise unable to fulfill your professional roles, that a person who has a mental health license may be acting on your behalf. That should alleviate these particular questions, especially if people can provide fully informed consent in those situations.
Sure. Okay, so you want to make sure that there's informed consent. You want to make sure that you have an agent that you trust that can accomplish these things. That feels okay to me because it's not relying on me as a therapist needing to put myself at risk, either emotionally or physically, as long as I'm doing the things that I need to do for my clients as a professional.
Sure.
Okay. So when we're looking at these icky terminations, I mean, what really is the risk? Do we have a sense of how often, and maybe this is going down a rabbit hole, but do we have a sense of how often clients actually report folks to the ethics committees or the consumer protection bodies around being abandoned by quote unquote bad therapists that won't treat them?
Simplified SEO Consulting's team of mental health professionals genuinely want to help you attract more of your ideal clients with a proven on-page SEO process using the strategies that are most effective for therapist websites. They know SEO is an investment, which is why it is so important to find someone who aligns with your values and understands the importance of building your private practice in a meaningful way. Simplified SEO Consulting hopes to be that team for you and your practice.
The expert team would love to talk with you during a free consultation to figure out the best fit for your SEO journey. Simplified SEO Consulting has DIY, done with you training, and done for you SEO options. So there's truly something to fit every practice owner's SEO needs. Be sure to ask if their innovative content network is a good fit for your website. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off a DIY SEO course with code MODERNTHERAPIST or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your free consultation for $100 off your done-for-you SEO program onboarding this spring.
Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern therapist.
So I think looking at those kind of gross numbers of these kinds of complaints is not helpful.
Okay.
The reality is a lot of these kinds of things don't end up getting reported by clients in the first place. That is not your protection. That is not your ethical or legal protection, because what is going to happen is that if you are one of those cases that does get reported, this is the evaluation process that you are going to be subjected to. And ethical decision making probably involves thinking about these things well beforehand. I can easily sit here from my cisgendered white male hetero privilege and tell everybody how they should act. But I'm specifically talking about how ethics committees or disciplinary committees would evaluate some of these decisions. So please don't shoot the messenger on this kind of a thing. But people sitting on those committees would love if you have some sort of thought process that you've laid out at the beginning of your practice of, like I said, putting something in your informed consent about somebody may end up at some point needing to have to act professionally on my behalf. Things like having some sort of documentation manual that you've set for yourself as far as if I'm coming from a community that is a target of hate speech or, you know, is reasonably predictive of being targeted by people who are seeking out services and might end up targeting me because of these things, that you're going to have a plan in place of how you're going to respond to those clients. These are things that are that level of professionalism that we are held to that higher standard to, that allows us to engage in what many people in these Facebook groups are talking about, which is, you know, take care of yourself first. Taking care of yourself first is having the foresight of these are reasonable situations that I might end up in my role as a professional. And here's how I'm going to take care of them if I do ever run into those.
That makes sense. And I feel like there's a systemic issue that we can't solve right now, but I feel like there's a nod to professionalism, a nod to being able to behave appropriately and do those things. And, you know, as a clinician, I do want to make sure that I'm doing things correctly. I don't know how to formulate what my thought is. So I'm going to talk a little bit and we'll see if it gets anywhere helpful. But there are criticisms that I've heard that I am still sitting in around our profession being too formal or too structured in this way that doesn't allow for real people to actually engage in it, that really supports folks who sit in privilege to be able to be therapists and folks who don't have to conform to these standards that may be excruciatingly hard to accomplish. Now, what you're describing is planning ahead, saying, hey, I'm going to have horrible things happen to me as a therapist. How do I plan to take care of myself in those situations? Whether it's just strategic planning or feeling like I have to put on armor because of the specific things that make me. I mean, I think we can argue either way. But is there something we can do as a profession? And I really don't know the answer to this, so I'm just asking this kind of openly. Is there something we can do as a profession that helps clinicians to feel safer within it?
I think the at least part of the question, and maybe to put it in more succinct words, is the way that professionalism has been weaponized against marginalized communities in the past.
Yes, yes.
And thank you for pointing out that my intention of using professionalism here is about having foresight, not necessarily about wearing a suit and tie or appropriate professional dress to the office and being prim and proper. As a modern therapist, I encourage you to go and let your freak flag fly. Alongside having this professional foresight. Now, part of taking care of ourselves as therapists is looking at those reasonably identifiable situations that we may get ourselves into trouble with clients and to develop safety plans around that. We, as a profession, professionals within our profession, tend to have clients act out against us physically at about the same rate as law enforcement do. Physically. I mean, this is a place where it can and it does happen. And it's an incredibly privileged place to come from, thinking that we can have practices that we're not going to be working with people who have mental health issues that are always going to be safe around us. And therefore, having the foresight to plan for those situations is where the level of professionalism comes in. That is where the clinician safety comes in, of making this a better place for our clinicians, is being able to take the collective knowledge of all of our community in being able to have the conversations of make plans, have the conversations of follow through on those plans. Don't think that you're never going to run into them. Be reasonable about the types of people that we work with. Document appropriately.
So in starting to get towards wrapping up, I think there's a couple of different episodes and we'll link to them in the show notes, but one of them is therapist safety. That was one that we did that was about true physical violence that led to the death of colleagues in Northern California. I think that there's an importance to understand how we protect ourselves as individuals, as clinicians. I think there's an importance in making sure that to the best of our ability, that we're taking care of our responsibilities as a clinician. And the thing that I want to just highlight again is that may not be putting ourselves back into the fray. It could be having a supervisor, a colleague, an agent of some sort make sure that your professional responsibilities are taken care of. And that feels okay with me. I think it's something where when these conversations go to a place of judging someone's response to a client, going to judging a person's own felt sense of the level of threat, that's where I get very protective of therapists. I understand that we are held to a different standard. I don't know if that's okay 100% of the time.
And that's where for us to keep a level of professionalism, and being able to rely on things like our ethics committees to help make those case-by-case situations actually does help protect us more than the absence of them.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is that having ethics people review these situations as they come up is at least people from a shared background and a institutional knowledge of working in mental health that allows for the very nuanced discussions and decision-making process on whether or not something's unethical or not. In the absence of that, what happens is it becomes government regulated and it becomes legislatively mandated. And those evaluations are not necessarily done by people who have the same kinds of work experience that you do.
Yeah.
And so the squishiness of this, sometimes it feels kind of bad, but ultimately there's more good created out of this because the people who are ultimately making the decision on whether your actions are ethical and representative of the profession are people who've likely been there themselves.
I think we've said what we can.
We will include links to these past episodes and relevant articles in our show notes. You can find those at mtsgpodcast.com. And check out the Therapy Reimagined Conference. We've got that coming up at the end of September, September 23rd, 24th, 25th, live in Los Angeles and virtually wherever you may be if you can't make it out to hang out with us in person. And until next time, I'm Kurt Widhelm with Katie Vernoy. Remember to check out Thrizer. They are passionate about making out-of-network therapy work for everyone. Clients save upfront on therapy while therapists earn their full rate. Get started in minutes on join.thrizer.com/modern therapist and use the promo code Modern Therapists and receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.
Don't forget, we have some special offers from our partner, Simplified SEO Consulting. Get 20% off a DIY SEO course with the code Modern Therapist, or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your free consultation for $100 off of your onboarding to the Done For You SEO program. Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. Learn more about who we are and what we do at mtsgpodcast.com. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter. And please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our episodes.